Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast. Today is February 5th, 2021. The Coconuts Podcast is your home for top trending news and pop culture from all across Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Vim Shanmugam.
And I'm Byron Perry.
Hola. Hi, Byron. I am back.
He's back. The soy sauce commercials are done.
I am back. They were a little salty. Or salty. They were soy fun. I'm running. I have no more puns. I feel like I need to replace the puns for the pun meter because summer's not here.
It's very sad without summer. She's busy now. Everybody's busy, yeah. So I got to fill in.
Yeah,
which I love.
Summer's
busy working. Sad.
Work.
Exactly. She's like the mayor in Blazing Saddles. Do you know that?
That's an old reference.
Yes, very old reference. Any plans for Chinese New Year, Vim?
No, I think it's going to be a bit of a working break because we're kind of getting to crunch time. A lot of the busy parts of our year, our month, is always like right after CNY because everyone kind of saves it for like right after because they're like, we're going to take a break. We're going to relax during CNY. And then after that, it's like boom, 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 boom. So we'll do a little bit, but definitely like my mom's a big Mahjong player. Oh. Yeah. So it's always fun to just watch her and her friends play because they get kind of rowdy.
Heated?
Well, they play for very long. I don't know what the restrictions are, but you know they're gonna be playing till like wee hours of the morning. Let's just put it that way.
Party. Well, this year there's the big news that here in Singapore and in Malaysia, I believe it is only in Singapore and Malaysia, it's a unique Chinese New Year tradition in those places. They do yusheng, right, where people throw up. Sorry, not throw up. But use their chopsticks to throw up in the air this salad, yusheng salad, and they shout auspicious slogans. The main one being huada, right?
What does that even mean?
I mean, it's all about good luck and prosperity, right?
I'm going to assume so. I think summer's not here to decipher. Yeah, good luck, prosperity, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
But this year, that's not allowed. So because of obviously COVID, getting together around a circular table and shouting a lot and throwing stuff around at each other, food in this case is not a good idea, even though there are hardly any cases here. So yeah, it'll be a muted celebration for Chinese New Year this year in Hong Kong.
Everyone can wish one another behind closed doors or masks.
Yes. Absolutely.
Advertise with our in-house agency Grove. Fast, funny, digital. Join forces with us to slay buzzwords, rise above the noise, and sow the seeds of something great. Get in touch via coconuts.co/grove.
Diving into our top stories, the first story is really quite awful and sad, actually, I'm sorry to say. And this was the killing of an old man, an old Thai man in San Francisco, which is actually my hometown, by a random thug on the streets of San Francisco. He was out on his morning walk and he had, I believe, recently moved to San Francisco to be with his daughter from Thailand, who his daughter was living there. And a young kid who I think is 19 years old and was arrested just charges him and rams into him and smashes him aggressively. He falls on the pavement, cracks his head, and he died, I believe, one or two days later. So it's a really horrific story. Furthermore, because they suspect that it was an instance of anti-Asian racism.
Hate crime, basically.
A hate crime. This is not totally confirmed, and I did watch the video, which is horrific, and it just does look like a totally random, you know, the kid's a teenager, kids do crazy stuff. I don't know if it's totally clear that this was a targeted hate crime, but it's definitely just horrific and possible that it was that. Here's a quick excerpt from the Coconuts Bangkok story. The family of a Thai senior citizen who died after being violently knocked to the ground in San Francisco is seeking justice and blaming anti-Asian racism for his death. Vichar Ratanapakdi, 84, was on a Thursday morning walk in the city's Anza Vista neighborhood when a young man charged and barreled into him at full speed. Racism is suspected in the unprovoked attack, which sent Vichar sprawling hard to the ground and evidently hitting his head against a closed garage door.
Wow.
Vichar was later rushed to a hospital where he died 2 days later on Saturday. Antoine Watson, 19, was arrested later that day and charged with murder, elder abuse, and assault. His associate, 20-year-old Malaysia Gu, strange name, was also arrested on suspicion of being an accessory to the attack after she was spotted fleeing the scene with Watson in CCTV footage of the attack.
Yeah.
The attack has drawn significant attention in San Francisco's Asian American community as an example of the hate-fueled violence which has surged since the pandemic began last year, fanned by those pinning blame on China. So it's just a horrible story. And it was, you know, certain, there's bad news every day, but certain stories just affect you a bit more. And this one really hit home for me and bothered me because I'm from San Francisco and I've been so angry about this rise in anti-Asian sentiment in America, frankly driven by former President Trump. So yeah, sad story.
Yeah. Yeah, not a fun story. Obviously, like a poor guy moved over there to spend time with his daughter and yeah, just kind of crummy, you know, like you said, like I think there has been a lot of perpetrated by some people in power we shall not mention ever again.
You can mention it.
And you know, people have just taken things into their own hands. And yeah, this poor man, the CCTV footage is kind of hard to watch, you know, like he's just like standing there in his backyard and this dude just comes up out of nowhere, unprovoked, boom, slams him down. So not cool. Not good. Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah. And well, news in Bali, well, I don't think this is anything shocking. But foreign tourist arrivals in Bali hits a decade-long low. Last year, obviously, being horrific for tourism in Bali. Foreign tourists, there were only about 1 million last year, which is something like an 83% drop from 2019, which is just insanity.
More than I would have thought, actually.
Yeah, well, because I think like the reason being that Bali actually didn't close their doors till like April 2nd. So they were trying to push through and ride the wave, quote unquote. The wave has not ended, and unfortunately, like during that time, you know, like a lot of people did come into the country, but then a lot of people left as well. And now Indonesia and Bali, there's a lot of, you know, the rise in COVID is still extremely crazy. I think as of February 1st, the COVID-19 tally is about 26,000 cases in Bali. So tourism industry really just got destroyed. I mean, obviously all around the world, but especially so in Bali. So 1 million people seems like a lot of people, but you know, all that was gone like before. That was all done by April 2nd. So not shocking news, not shocking news.
Yeah, Bali is struggling. Pour one out and pray for the influencers and the digital nomads.
Yeah. They can't leave
if they want to. They can't get in there if they want to. Who will save the digital nomads and their ebooks and their Instagram accounts and their dropshipping of useful products?
There are too many beaches and sunsets that are not being shot right now.
I know. All those sunsets are not being Instagrammed and it's a fucking tragedy.
So many bikinis and swimsuits and Speedos not being worn.
Yeah, it's very sad. There's a lot of pent up demand though, as we've been saying for months, and eventually they're going to come back with a vengeance. Although I don't know. I like to think that maybe in some of these massive tourism destinations that frankly have in recent years and decades, maybe not developed in the best ways, such as a lot of parts of Bali. If you've ever been to Kuta at 2 a.m. at the height of high season, I don't think it's a wonderful place, and I don't think it aligns with what Bali is all about. And so maybe this is an opportunity to sort of move away from low quality tourism and, you know, over tourism. But let's see. We'll have to see when the pandemic improves as to whether there is this permanent shift. But Thailand, I mean, the reason I thought a million sounded like a lot, because I've been seeing the Thailand tourism numbers, and I'm pretty sure it'll be like 100 in a month or a few hundred. It'll be like 712 tourists entered Thailand, whereas, you know, it would be like 7 million in a month previously.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, like we said, like, it was like before the borders were closed, and this is, you know, they don't even have like specific protocols or like a timeline for tourists to come in yet. So we might be waiting for a bit.
I've heard a bit as well from people I know in Bali, but there has been a lot of tourism from other parts of Indonesia. I think mainly Jakarta, and like the Jakarta peeps are overrunning Bali and are enjoying in their own way. city slickers, and also very Instagram influencer oriented, I think. So
mainland, those mainland thugs.
Yes, exactly. Javanese. But anyway, about Indonesia, furthermore, another story from Indonesia on Coconuts Jakarta. Nunuk Nureni, the woman behind Indomie's iconic flavors, has died at the age of 59. Very sad. This lady has contributed a lot to the world, namely a bunch of tasty MSG-filled instant noodle flavors.
Very sad.
Do you like Indomie, Vim?
I do, actually. I actually do. Like, it's. I mean, I'm not going to say it's like healthy for you, but yeah, it was. It's good.
Who would say that it's healthy?
I don't know.
That person would be a nut.
It's like poor college kid food, right? So, like, Indomie's great. So great.
It's. I mean, I don't know how much a packet of Indomie costs in Indonesia, but it's probably like 5 rupiah.
Yeah, it's like super cheap. Like, it's like 10 cents sing or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So Coconuts Jakarta said, "It's a sad day for instant noodle lovers in Indonesia and all around the world as we mourn the passing of Nunuk Nureni, the inventor of Indomie's various flavors. She was 59 years old. News of her death was announced by Indofood, the company behind the beloved instant noodles. Nunuk, a graduate of Padjadjaran University Food Technology Department in Bandung, West Java, worked as a flavor development manager at Indofood's instant noodle division for nearly 30 years. Several of her tasty creations for Indomie included Indonesian traditional flavors such as soto, rendang, chicken curry, and sambal mata, as well as the OG mie goreng." "It's only apt to say that Indomie's mie goreng is a source of pride for any Indonesian, with an irreplaceable flavor that always satisfies our noodle-loving hearts. Indomie is also known and enjoyed by people in more than 80 countries around the world, such as Nigeria, where it has become a household name, as well as Australia and the U.S. So RIP Nunuk Nureni, giver of delicious noodle flavors to the world."
Yeah, very sad, very sad. Actually, like, there's a very famous, well, I shouldn't say very famous, but it's like a spicy chicken place in Singapore. It's actually from Indonesia. It's a chain in Indonesia, but they opened up in Singapore, and they actually serve their super, super spicy chicken with Indomie, and it's like the perfect combo. Like, if you want to just eat something that's just full of fire, highly recommended.
Yes. What's that chain called?
It's called I am, I'm going to butcher it, but I am Bebek, I think. I am Bebek Belur. Yeah. I am, and the dish is called I am Geprek, which is like a chicken, like a fried, it's kind of like a fried chicken cutlet kind of looking thing. But then they like kind of slather it on with this like freshly made like chili sauce. It's just with a bunch of like chilies, garlic, and onions all like pounded on the spot. And then they just kind of, they don't even cook it. It's like just put on there, and it's like this fresh, like potent chili. And then you eat it with like this really hot, crispy, spicy, stir fried like Indomie noodles. And it's not good for you, but it's great.
Again, caveat, not good for you. Here's a tweet from a Indonesian Twitter user, Gusti Rapi, who said, "We lost Mrs. Nunuk Nureni, the genius flavor developer of people's beloved instant noodles Indomie today. May her soul rest in love, and her legacies will definitely forever live on. You are truly a legend for Indonesians. She's getting the outpouring she deserves.
R.I.P. Well, in staying on the topic of food in Hong Kong, unfortunately, this is not going to be as delicious as Indomie, but a bakery chain called Maxim, they've been fined because a customer found a lizard in their pork bun. Sure. So bakery chain Maxim, which is a popular chain in Hong Kong for pastries and buns and whatnot, they got fined about 9,000 Hong Kong dollars, which is about $1,200 US, where a customer bought a pork bun and apparently bit into, and this is quite hilariously described, tasted something oddly reptilian, and then looked inside and found that it was actually a small lizard. So
on impression then. This tastes reptilian. You look like it's a lizard.
Yeah. What does that even mean? Like, well, what's reptilian? Like, why does this lady know what that taste is?
And cold-blooded vibes and notes from this pork bun. Yeah.
I felt a sense of evil as I bit into this. So yeah. But this is not the first time that they've been under fire. Maxim also runs a little bakery store in the Baptist University dining hall. And there they've found vermin in the food, a dead worm, a cockroach. A cockroach was also found in their restaurant. They also run this restaurant called Jade Garden, which is a Chinese restaurant. And there was a cockroach that was found in some Sichuan shrimp. So they had Sichuan roach in that menu. Sichuan roach.
Thank God this has never happened to me. And I hope it
does.
I don't want any sort of lizards, cockroaches, rats, or any other vermin in my food. But this happens once a month. Several times per year, for sure. On coconut, there's a story of people getting some disgusting stuff in their food.
Weird stuff. I've never actually had one of those situations before. I did have some Thai boat noodles in Singapore once, and I shall not name what restaurant it was. It's a famous boat noodles chain, and my buddy found a thumbtack in it. And so we posted about it, and they were really apologetic. They gave us the meal for free, but we were like, he almost died. So we're never coming back here. So
keep debris and vermin out of our food, please.
Yeah. Just the food.
Moving on to kale. Interesting story on coconuts kale regarding a government minister who really kind of made a not very smart decision to wear what looked like almost definitely an extremely expensive timepiece while he gave a speech about alleviating poverty. Another one of those politician with super expensive watch situations. Here's what Coconuts KL said. Federal Territories Minister Anwar Musa probably went a little too bougie on his timepiece option when preaching about alleviating poverty during a press conference yesterday. All eyes have been on the gold watch he wore at the event up until today, after photos of the minister were published showing him slumped on a couch while holding up a piece of paper and showing off the accessory.
Ooh.
What people think it is a Richard Mille, which could cost about ₱1 million, which is about 333,000 USD, isn't it?
Yeah, like 300 grand. Yeah.
Or maybe four, ish, yeah. 3 to 4. So like 250 to 350K
USD. Yeah.
Yes. Not good. Not smart. It may have been a Richard Mille. It may also be a Hublot Spirit of Big Bag timepiece that's worth a mere 200,000 ringgit, which is about 50,000 USD. Coconuts KL has photos of both here. It does look very much like both of them, actually. The watches look similar.
Yeah.
Neither one is remotely cheap, and neither one should be worn by a minister, especially when giving a speech about poverty alleviation. Here's what one Twitter user wrote. He said, "Sir, that thing on your wrist can feed 30,000 families." Another said, "Poor people need to exist so rich people can wear watches worth more than a car." Bad PR.
Savage, man. Savage. Yeah, but I mean, it also just shows like people are like all these like politicians are just so disconnected, right? Like just totally. Who's your PR person? Like who's your PR person? Who's your publicist? Like make sure just like look like humble, you know? If you can't be humble or you're going to be talking a whole bunch of shit, like at least like be like look the part, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too much. Not possible. They're too removed from reality.
Oh dear. Especially like, yeah. Well, I shouldn't go into too much controversy, but yeah, I think we can just say that this is not the first time that something like this has happened.
Oh yeah, not the last either, probably.
100%. In more shocking news that no one predicted, Philippines Airlines is going to retrench 2,300 workers due to COVID-19, and obviously I was just being sarcastic. Unfortunately, Philippines Airlines, just like other airlines, last year, I think since late 2020, they've already sort of like preempted their staff that, you know, there were going to be lots of cutbacks and there's going to be a 30% drop in their 7,000 workforce, which is obviously 2,300 people. They've already been operating at about like 30% of their pre-pandemic numbers. And most of their flights have been domestic, obviously. And it's just another example of like, you know, tourism and airlines just not being able to stave off COVID-19. And you know, I think the International Air Transport Association, they feel that, you know, the impact of COVID-19 is going to be felt all the way through to 2024. And while they do expect some increase in travel this year, it's still going to be like way lower than 2019.
Yeah, the carnage continues in the travel industry, and I think airlines have got to be maybe the hardest hit segment just overall.
Yeah,
we could check on that, but hotels at least can offer staycations, but
yeah,
so much travel is international, and it's not really happening, and you know, people really shouldn't be traveling very much. That getting in a plane is not optimal during the time of pandemic. So they're really struggling. And it sucks that these people got retrenched.
It's severe. Yeah. I mean, a lot of airlines, even before the pandemic, like, you know, a lot of airlines were already kind of struggling. Yeah. And, you know, obviously the bigger ones were still being successful. But like, yeah, and small airlines, regional airlines, state airlines, or just airlines that are not, I guess, but the bigger countries are all, you know, we're all, you know, on the brink of being bankrupt. And I feel like, you know, this is just another nail.
Yeah, absolutely. Meanwhile, here in Singapore, the top story of the past week has been about the Trace Together tokens and app that there's been quite some controversy about. The long story short, and hopefully I get this right, is that the government had told users of this app and token, which citizens of Singapore and people who live here are supposed to download or get the physical app to track their location. And it's basically an even more robust type of checking in everywhere and contact tracing in the case of, you know, to contact trace if there is an outbreak of COVID. They had said that that data, which is very detailed, obviously location data, would be used only for contact tracing and nothing else. But it came out that that data was going to be used sometimes for legal and criminal investigations.
Yeah.
Did I get that right, Vin?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah. So, they told everyone that it's not going to be used for anything else except for contact tracing. But then now, like, they said that data will be made available to the cops, basically, if someone was involved in something. So,
yeah. And I read that it's already been used even in the case of the Punggol murder. So, not will be, it already is being used. But I think the big outcry here was just the change in what the policy was going to be. And some would say the untruth or the clear about face as to how this data was going to be used. And so on Coconut Singapore, we wrote about a session of parliament where the opposition party was quite scathing about this about face on the use of that data.
Yeah.
What Coconut Singapore said is Singapore's political opposition, including leader Pritam Singh, are not letting the government off the hook for falsely telling the public that tracking data collected to fight COVID-19 would be kept out of the reach of law enforcement. Workers' Party Chief Singh and Chairman Sylvia Lim were among those in Parliament questioning why such an efficient government was unable to come clean about the privacy threats posed by its trace-together COVID-19 tracking system. The arguments came hours after the minister in charge of Singapore's Smart Nation Tech Initiatives apologized for telling Singaporeans last year that their data would only be used for coronavirus contact tracing.
Mm-hmm.
Singh took the floor to say people weren't buying it in proper parliamentarian wordiness. When Minister Vivian Balakrishnan admitted in Parliament that he did not consider Section 20 of the Criminal Procedure Code, there are Singaporeans who opine that this was not fathomable or even believable for a largely efficient government machinery that has consistently approached COVID-19 as a whole of government endeavor. They further contend that if not ministers, at least the officials in the Ministry of Home Affairs, the Ministry of Health, and GovTech who conceived TraceTogether would have known of the privacy considerations surrounding TraceTogether. He added, urging those holding power to be more transparent with how people's personal information would be used. So yeah, it's an about face here. People are unhappy. I think it's an interesting situation, and it's further... there's a new wrinkle into how things work here in Singapore, which is that the parliament sessions are now broadcast live, right?
Yeah.
Which previously they were not. So news sources are able to report directly what goes on in parliament, whereas previously that would not be possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, like I saw it coming from a mile away.
when he said that it would not be used.
Yeah, like
to recap, that was kind of a big story. It was like they launched this TraceTogether, and then this very top minister said, "Don't worry, the data will not be used for anything ever other than contact tracing." Right?
And then yeah.
In a few months, it's like, "Oh, actually, it is kind of, you know, just just major crimes and a few other things."
Yeah, like it's gonna be an app. Like once you say like it's gonna be an app where you have a token that you have to keep on your person like all the time. Like, yeah, 100%. And like your app. So how the app also works is that it kind of does like auto like sort of, I guess, like info exchanges with like other app users to claim. I'm not really like clear on like how that specifically works, but it's supposed to like kind of manage like, you know, who you're tracing with, who's in the proximity with you and all that stuff, which eats up your battery, by the way. But that's a whole other point. But yeah, the key thing being that, like, yeah, I kind of knew this was going to happen. Like, I wasn't surprised when they're like, oh, yeah, we're gonna also use this for like criminal stuff and other things and so on and so forth. I'm like, shocker. Like, you know, like, yeah, it's always like, you know, it was always their plan. They're not going to say it, but, you know, I'm going to call it like it is.
You said it, not me. That's what I was about to say. Was it a lie? Was it a straight up lie? Was it just an original, in the original statement, misspeaking out of ignorance?
Yeah.
Did they just kind of change their mind?
Yeah.
It's got to be one of the three. Kind of an honest mistake. Lie or a change of their opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Pritam said was kind of, it's probably true. Like, you know, that I don't think they meant anything to be like dishonest or unclear, but I think they knew that the app for sure, you know, had all, it's a tracing app. So it's a tracking app as well. So if it's going to help like solve like, you know, violent crimes and you know, I think like there's a bill that is being reviewed right now where it could be used to, you know, track like any cases that involve weapon use, terrorism, murder, drugs, sexual assault. I think that's fine. You know, like I think Singaporeans will have an issue with two things. One, yeah, just say that's going to be used for that. Like, you know, that's fine. I think no one would have disagreed with that. I think that part of it is like just don't say it's like for one thing and then now it's like for like A, B, C, D, E. Yeah, I think like that's the part that I think Pritam and everyone else is a little like perturbed by it. No one's saying that like it's like, you know, oh, we don't want to be on these, we don't want to use this anymore because like we don't want like murders to be solved. Like I think it's more the give us the information. We're all smart people, like we're intelligent people. Like, you know, just like try not to put the wool,
don't pull the wool
over our eyes.
Absolutely.
Well, now top story of the week. This is, I would say, interesting. It's actually kind of cool, but also against a very intense backdrop. In Myanmar, a aerobics dancer went viral because she was doing a dance while a coup was taking place behind her. So this is a very intense story. So as for people who know, the Myanmar military has been trying to move in and seize power in a coup this past week. But meanwhile, King Ninwai was making some moves of her own. The 26-year-old aerobics dancer was actually practicing some aerobics moves outside the parliament building. And unbeknownst to her, there was a barricade behind her where all of a sudden there were a bunch of military vehicles moving in. Because the coup was happening, but she kept on dancing and was kind of oblivious to the whole situation. And obviously she was recording this, and this video has kind of gone viral all across Asia and the world, really. And yeah, very, very kind of I guess a very unique backdrop, shall we say.
A very 2021 story, just dancing through a military coup.
Yeah, it's like fuck this. I'm done, you know. Yeah, very, very interesting. I guess like a very like kind of off the wall situation, you know, something like so intense and crazy that's going on, very sad as well. But you know, she's like, it's just kind of going on with her aerobics class.
Because apparently she was doing it for, I think, a contest.
Just training for a fitness dance competition, and she was playing an Indonesian song. Is that what it is?
Yeah. So that's another great aspect of this, which is kind of funny and cross-cultural and cross-country, is that the song she was dancing to is a huge Indonesian, I think it's a dangdut song. Dangdut's a type of dance, Indonesian music. Yeah, basically, Coconuts Jakarta said, all eyes around the world have turned to Myanmar, where the military have staged a coup d'etat upending the country's transition to democracy. Yet amid all the worrying developments, there appeared to be room for some respite from politics in the form of a woman who inadvertently recorded the coup in the background of her workout video. Indonesians were quick to notice that she was dancing to hit dangdut tune Ampun Bang Jago, Have Mercy Bang Jago, by Tian Storm and Ever Silker. The earworm of a tune, which fuses traditional dangdut beats with electronic disco sounds, was released in September 2020 and has since become a huge cultural phenomenon in Indonesia and now in Myanmar too. Yeah, I think this is sort of a TikTok thing. And one of the videos I saw had 15 million views. It's definitely gone viral globally. I saw some people on Twitter kind of saying, oh, this isn't a laughing matter. There's a coup. No jokes should be made and people shouldn't be making light of this video of this lady dancing. But I have to say, I personally was like, no, it's absolutely fine. The jokes will continue. The coup is bad. There's a lot of bad things that have happened in the world this year. The jokes continued anyways. Happens to be that Myanmar's coup so far has been bloodless. So as bad as it is to reject a democratic election as is happening there.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody's died, and she did her little dance and went viral. Everybody.
Yeah. Dies. To find out more about this dance revolution, I'm going to be talking to our Yangon writer, Matthew, to find out more about the coup and obviously this aerobics dancer who has gone viral. Hi, Matthew. Thank you for coming on the show.
Hello, Ben. Thank you for having me.
So some intense times in Myanmar. Can you maybe for our listeners who might not know, give them a little bit of a overview about the situation there now.
So I think everyone's already knew about what's happening in Myanmar. I think it's literally everywhere. International news agency, it's on Twitter, it's on Facebook, it's on Instagram. It's literally everywhere. So and it's actually happening here. The coup.
But you covered a story which was quite interesting. A dancer, there was an aerobics dancer who was performing a dance or training, a video that went viral as the coup was happening, right?
Yes, correct.
So tell us about this story. I know it's a bit controversial.
According to her, actually she was just dancing for her next competition of the aerobic dance. And then she didn't notice at all what was happening in her back. So she just kept dancing. She didn't even hear a little bit of sound what's happening in the back. Yeah, I think it may be because of her, you know, music, because it's louder. It's very loud.
Was she like teaching a class or was she just kind of training on her own?
Oh, she was just giving herself a training and then recording a clip of her for her upcoming competition.
Oh wow. And like once she saw, like obviously she saw like what was happening behind her, like after her training, like what was her like reaction?
Oh, she wrote it on her Facebook that saying it was a really good memory. I didn't really like notice what happened. Yeah, I'm back.
That's kind of insane and like so 2021. And now obviously like she's become this sort of viral superstar, I guess. And so what are like some of the reactions from the people who are there?
Yes, it's the internet, so you know, like people really love this kind of like funny clips and videos. So they were just sharing all over their Facebook and saying, wow, it's amazing. And some say, wow, she's really restless. Yes. And I don't know when her video like went up to the Twitter, like it's gone everywhere.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's gone everywhere. Like with, I mean, it's such a unique thing. And what is the significance of her? Like, did it just happen to be that she liked Indonesian music or like, because she was dancing to a hit song, Dangdut, right? Dangdut tune, which is kind of like specific dance. Was that something that like she just loved? Is there some significance about that type of Indonesian music, like being popular, like in Myanmar?
Actually, no. In Myanmar, there are like some Europe and American influence music. But some of Burmese people love K-pop too. So I think Indonesian music is not the one, just the one.
Yeah.
Maybe it may be because the music is really like, you know, matchy, catching.
Yeah.
It's really match with her, you know, dance, her Arabic dance. Yeah.
And it's also like, I guess like it's that music is also, or that style of music also used in very like popular, like TikTok, like dances, right?
Yeah. That's true.
So that could have been like maybe part of it. So very, very, obviously a very interesting story. And I guess like now with regard to the coup, like what is the current situation and how is the country sort of like reacting to everything?
Okay. So, everything here is normal, except the coup, but people are participating in the civil disobedience movement against the military coup. So everyone here is protesting peacefully from their Facebook, from their social media, and then they drum the tin cans at 8 p.m. every night. I think it's already 2 days and tonight will be the time they keep doing it.
Mm.
It's the tradition come from the old people that when you want to drive the devil away, you do that.
Oh, okay. So it has like significant, like cultural significance as well. Okay. Yeah. And, but everyone, like you said, like it's a peaceful protest and everyone's kind of safe and there hasn't been any like, you know, there hasn't been anyone like hurt so far or anything.
No.
Okay. That's good. Well, thank you, Matthew, for coming on. Hope you stay safe. Hope everything goes well and you know, like things come, you know, that everything works out and you know, you're good to go. But very interesting story. Keep us enthralled with your stories and we will talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Awesome. And that's all from us this week. See you next week. Bye. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to support Coconuts and our weird and wondrous stories, you can become a Coco Plus member at coconuts.co/membership, make a patron payment at coconuts.co/patron, or buy our fresh merch at the Coconut Shop at shop.coconuts.co. Subscribe to the podcast and leave reviews. Tell us how you feel and what you like and don't like. We're excited to hear from you.
The Coconuts podcast delivers impactful, weird, and wondrous reporting by our journalists on the ground in 8 cities. Singapore, Bangkok, Hong Kong, Manila, Jakarta, Kuala Lumpur, Yangon, and Bali. Listen to headline news and insightful interviews on matters large and small, designed for people located in or curious about Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. The Coconuts podcast is a Coconuts Media production. Our hosts are Summer Lee and Vim Shamugam. Our executive producer is Byron Perry. Our production manager is Clarissa Cortez, and our editor is Raina Lim.